Hey, I think we have Eve Engler on the line.
How's it going, Phil?
Hey, you're a smart fella. You got past my ignorance and made it. Thank you very much. Eve, I've been trying to talk about your opinions, and better I let you do it. So, first of all, Blinken was in town, and he met Minister Jolie, and of course, Ms. Freeland, because nobody can come to Ottawa without seeing Freeland, but they also met you. How did your meeting with Blinken go?
It went very well, actually. Blinken tried to do a photo op at the Jean Talon Market, the well-known market in Montreal, and we got about 10 people inside that acted like they were shopping, and suddenly when Blinken appeared, we started yelling hard at him. And
what were your points? What were you asking him to do, telling him to do?
We were saying no to foreign military intervention. No, and no to the core group, which is the body that has been dictating Haitian affairs for most of the past two decades, that Canada should withdraw. And it was actually pretty remarkable to see him. Like, he walked in all ready to shake hands and shook a couple hands, but then basically ran out of the area. And what we were told is that he was supposed to actually afterwards even go downstairs and meet with some merchants and stuff like that. So the action got quite a bit of attention. Radio-Canada and Le Devoir and La Presse all mentioned it. And there was also about 10 or 15 people inside who were also rallying in solidarity with Haiti.
Well, congratulations, because we were just lamenting the fact that there are, in Parliament, there is no voice, there is no question. And yet, Canada's history in Haiti is botched and criminal and every other thing. So you spoke up. Thank you very much. I want to ask you about this situation. The way they're posing the issue now is that somebody has to do something about, quote, gangs. And they talk about Chapter 7 and all that. To my mind, this makes it easy to sort of intervene or to initiate violence, because if you're facing, quote, a gang. But why aren't they giving us some political characterization of what the people in the streets of Haiti want?
First of all, they're not doing that because of what the people in the streets of Haiti are doing, or they're burning tires in front of the Canadian embassy, which they did a week ago, and they're denouncing Canada while holding Russian flags and painting their bodies in Russian colors, because basically they see they hate Canada and the U.S. so much that the enemy of Canada and the U.S. is viewed as a friend, partly, and also they're actually appealing to China and Russia to block UN Security Council resolution, which actually appears that have it's not exactly clear what's
going on. They've done, right?
To some extent, seem to have done, and they're also, of course, calling for a multipolar world in doing that. But they don't. You know, I've written about this. There's dozens and dozens now of examples of Haitians condemning Canada in front of the consulate, throwing Molotovs at the Canadian embassy, carrying all kinds of very elaborate props with the Canadian, U.S., French flags, and so it's clear that, I don't know the percentage, I can't say that, you know, 80% of Haitians dislike Canada. What I can say is that there's a lot of Haitians that don't like Canada, and they don't like Canada for very good reason. It's grounded in not some sort of abstraction, but some very concrete policy measures that Canada has pursued as the second imperial force in the country right after the U.S. And And so, you know, every here and there, you get a little bit of a mention of some of this in the Canadian media. But in the concrete, right now, they want Ariel Henry gone. I mean, the guy has no legitimacy, no constitutional legitimacy, very limited popular support. He was appointed literally through a tweet by the core group 15 months ago after Jovenel Moïse was
killed.
But put out a statement, just tweeted it out, and then 48 hours later, the power structure all fell behind Ariel Henry. It's because Haiti is even without a foreign military mission there, it's totally dominated. Even without even if the core group disbanded tomorrow and Ariel Henry left tomorrow, Haiti would still be under the boot of U.S. Canadian imperialism. Through NGOs, through business lobby groups, through a whole myriad of different forms of outside domination. And so basically now we have a situation where 15 months of Ariel Henry has been a catastrophe. He and the Peshteka regime that he's part of have been aligning with gangsters. They are themselves. I mean, this goes back, more than a decade. Michel Martelly, he himself was a makout of the Jean-Claude Duvalier dictatorship, the thugs of the Jean-Claude Duvalier dictatorship, and he had all kinds of gun runners and murderers and rapists who were in his inner circle. And as their part of their political strategy, they've empowered those factions. And basically, this empowering and a destruction, really, of any sort of legitimacy in the judicial system to the, nobody's elected. There's no elected officials in the country anymore, really. And the disintegration of the political and judicial and other institutions in the country has led to a situation where there's incredible insecurity. Then, gangs have taken on an important role in life, and the Haitian police are obviously very tied in with the gangsters. The most well-known gangster is a former police officer, and if you look at the CBC, a year ago, Evan Dyer has quite a good piece about a year ago where he basically says that Ariel Henry was appointed by the core group through a tweet, and that he aligns with these gangs that are causing all kinds of mayhem and whatnot. And he does that a year ago. And then, a month ago, he's still willing to mention it. But now it's like the whole humanitarian, the whole Bob Ray kind of line of what's going on is the main line of, Haiti disintegration, and the gangs are sort of in the buried in the bottom. And then he published another piece a week ago where now any of the context is just completely wiped out. And now it's just, the horror of Haiti, there's cholera, there's gangs, there's insecurity. It's a completely disconnected from very clear a political trajectory that Canada has its hands, in every facet of that political trajectory, from appointing Ariel Henry to basically forcing the Peshteka regime back in after the earthquake in 2010 to the earlier phase of the 2004 coup and the UN occupation that comes after that. So that's all just completely eliminated from the discussion, and now we're to believe it's the Canadian government looking to to help the Haitians. But the reality is, when Blinken and Joly met, that was the two biggest gangsters in Haiti getting together to discuss further, terrorizing Haitians.
Yeah, it's an odd thought, but I remember Marlon Brando got in trouble because when they asked him about how he developed the character in The Godfather, and he said he based it on Henry Kissinger. And the New York Times wrote an editorial saying you shouldn't talk like that. This is not a joke. But, you just described it, naming a government by tweet, and then you're the core group. You're a gang, right?
They are the,
And you have weapons.
They got the big weapons. And that's, and this is the other part. There is this popular mobilization. One of the CBC articles 5 days ago, it says about Haiti, long article about Haiti. And then towards the end, it says the mass protests have been going on against the oppressive regime. Well, that's the two final paragraphs of talking about the Blinken visit, the two final paragraphs that happen to be about Iran. So nothing about the mass protests in Haiti that this story is supposed to be about. They bring in protests against the oppressive regime when they, you know, the discussion goes into the different direction. And so this popular uprising that's been going on in Haiti, that, you know, yesterday the police assassinated a journalist they arrested a journalist, and then when journalists went to the police station to look into it, they literally just assassinated a guy. There's a video of the guy lying dead in front of the police station. And the same day, on Rosie Barton on the CBC, you have Melanie Joly boasting about Canada giving $40 million to the Haitian police. But I guarantee you, you'll hear nothing from any of the Canadian officials about this journalist being assassinated by that police force that we pay for, that we train, that we arm, and that we repeatedly diplomatically back. But when they kill protesters, when they shoot a journalist, there's all kinds of examples of them shooting journalists in horrific ways. It's silence, radio silence from the Canadian government. Yes. And you know, that's just, you know, part of, we build up the repressive arm of the Haitian state. And if that repressive arm is not doing the work well enough, we will, you know, try to organize to send in, you know, a foreign contingent that will assist in it. Yeah.
By the way, and that leads into books that you have written and are writing about the Canadian military. But aren't we headed towards this thing of answering the call that Trump put on Canada? You got to do more. You got to pay more. You got to build up your army. And they're saying, for example, in relation to Haiti, well, we want to help, but we're not sure we have the wherewithal. So the only answer that they seem to give themselves is go and get the wherewithal to do it.
Yeah, there's definitely a strong push to increase Canadian military spending. And if you look at it, and this is clearly the case with Haiti, and that's part of what the Blinken trip was about. I mean, basically, each added dollar to the Canadian military is an added dollar to the U.S. empire, and that's because the Canadian military is totally integrated with the U.S. military. And as this,
we buy their weapons, right? And it all has to match what they want us to have.
There's the whole question,
and they even assign to us certain weapons, and certain weapons they don't assign to us. The whole kind that would make us interesting as a country. Go ahead.
The whole question of interoperability and so I mean that it's both from a, you know, the Canadian military deploys with and in service of the U.S. empire, and as you pointed out, the weapons, and a dollar to military spending usually means some of that goes into the arms companies, which are, you know, largely U.S. based Canadian subsidiaries, branch plants, and so the Haiti. But I think in the case of Haiti, you know, Canada is, there is obviously pressure coming from Washington, but this is, Canada's also the pressure, right? So Canada's lobbying hard the different CARICOM, the Caribbean community countries, to put up forces for a mission in Haiti, because Trudeau wants, quite frankly, he wants a blackface to the mission. So as many Caribbean troops as possible, or police as possible. And also it's a combination of PR reasons and just staffing of the mission. Mm-hmm. And so Canada is, you know, being pressed by Washington to some extent in pursuing this, but Canada's also, you know, I would say the more interesting story is how much pressure Canada's putting on Caribbean countries and other countries to join a mission to Haiti, which again is a mission that's being rejected by mass protests. And it's not to say that there isn't serious problems. There are serious problems. There is serious problems of insecurity. But Haiti's number one problem is this problem is lack of sovereignty, and lack of allowing the Haitian people to actually determine their own affairs.
Yeah. We've been speaking to Eve Engler. Eve, you're going to be out and around, and you're promoting the book. What's the name of the book, and where can people see you?
I'll be in Toronto confirmed for November 23rd, and London on November 24th, and hopefully a date in Hamilton around then, mm-hmm. and maybe Guelph as well. And the book is Stand on Guard for Whom? A People's History of the Canadian Military.
That's a great title. By the way, I love that cover. Eve Engler, thank you very much, and thank you for your diligence, and I apologize we were late getting in touch with you. Thanks again.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, bye-bye. This Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM.
Yep.
That's Eve hanging up. He even hangs up, you know, with a little panache. I think we are practically done. I want to thank Phil Conlon. Hey, I want to thank Barry Strom for giving me that article from the Miami Herald. Barry Strom was a postal militant, postal workers, and was a great close friend of the legendary Peter Leavitt. Anyway, for the Taylor Report, we'll see you next week.